Now, just a few weeks after that event, on May 30th, 1970, the Paisleys play at the State Fair Hippodrome in Falcon Heights with Shocking Blue, Ike and Tina Turner, Tony Joe White, Steam, local bands Zarathustra and Youngsters, and Fairport Convention. Does that ring a bell?
Absolutely. We went to that gig. We went real early, and it was the Hippodrome floor was all dirt, you know, because that's where they had the horses. Well, we're laying out there on the floor of the dirt about three quarters of the way back, right in the center. So we're at a real good observation point to listen to the sound system. And they had, I don't know, 50 speakers on either side of the stage. And it was so loud. And we had done these Orange Sunshine barrels, and we were just flying. And we heard all these bands, and I remember really specifically Ike and Tina Turner. And when they got on, it was just, man, it was cooking by then. But it was so loud, you couldn't really hear anything.
It was a big concrete building.
Yeah. Well, we got real disappointed in that because you couldn't really hear what they were singing about. So we decided, wait a second, we're not going to use the house PA. It's too big. Let's use our Marshall PA. So we took our Marshall PA up there, and we had two columns on either side of the group, and they had, what did they have in there? 412s, right?
Yeah.
412s in each column. It was perfect. It was just wonderful. You could hear everything. And, you know, guys like Clancy are out there in the audience. Oh, wow, yeah, that's great. That's fantastic. So that was really memorable to realize that these big shows with the 1,000 speakers up there in a concrete palace with the dirt floor is not acoustically good.
Now, in August of that year, 1970, I see, according to my notes, the Paisleys played at a couple of concerts under the banner The Soul of a City.
Well, that started in 69.
That started earlier.
Well, there were a couple of them, if I remember right.
Yeah, well, I know we played, when I was in town, we played Soul of the City.
And that was started by Lonnie Morgan. Ironically, Lonnie Morgan was a member of the University of Minnesota football team when I played football for the Gophers. Lonnie was a Gopher. He was another halfback, a real speedy halfback. And years, you know, a few years after that, he started getting into doing these bookings for the city and stuff. And so we would play downtown Minneapolis right on the mall for these events. We did some gigs over at Riverside Park. I believe we did a couple over, what's the...
There was a big park. I remember a big park.
Yeah, over by the, Riverside Park.
Fair Oaks Park is the one by the
Institute.
The Institute.
Yeah, Fair Oaks Park was another place. I remember that specifically. Yeah, those were all community events.
That was a fun time.
And it was an event basically to promote the city and its entertainment and music and stuff like that.
Now, the last job that I was able to verify of the Paisleys was December 23, 1970. It was a concert called Festival of Hope at the Minneapolis Convention Hall, along with Pepperfog, Willie Murphy, Lonnie Knight, Roy Alstead, and Charles Keating.
Well, I remember that gig because we were the last group to play. I don't remember all the other bands. Some of them you mentioned, I don't know if they actually played that gig or not. Maybe they did. But we were the last band, so I don't know if we heard it stuck around from the beginning. It probably started at noon with all those bands.
Did the Paisleys carry on into 1971, or did they end in end of 1970?
Well, that night at the auditorium, I do remember because we were last, and like I mentioned earlier, usually the last song we would wind up with was The Musical Journey. and that's when the circle dance would happen. While we're in the middle of the circle dance and the musical journey, and somebody pulled the plug.
Oh, the electricity.
Yeah.
Shut off?
Yeah. A janitor had gone over. Well, it's 12 o'clock. Zip. And we said, no, 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 no. Plug that sucker back in. We're not done. And we went back over and plugged it back in, and we finished the piece, and we finished the circle dance. I do remember that. Whether that was the very last gig the Paisley did in 71, I do not know.
No, 71.
I thought it was a soul of the city.
Well, I came back in June of 71. We did a few gigs the summer of 71. But for us, the magic of what we had been working on for all those years, the magic was gone.
Yeah.
And we all felt it.
Yeah, sure.
And so at the end of 71... we disbanded, I believe.
Yeah.
And then...
stopped playing publicly.
Right. And then we did the reunion gig. I can't remember what year that was.
That was 1980.
Okay. Hold off on the reunion gig, because my notes are showing in 1974, the band reformed to record at Moon Sound Studios in South Minneapolis.
Well, yeah, as a recording entity, we did. And... we recorded all kinds of demos. I have a plethora of tapes and things.
And you refer to this version of the band as the Minnesota Family Band?
At one time we thought, well, what should we call it? And we thought, well, okay, Minnesota Family Band is as good a name any here. Because we had other friends playing on some of these recordings. Even Clancy at that time was a guitar player and had his own band. And we had other friends on saxophone, and we had some backup female singers, and yeah, we had a lot of variety of stuff.
And Rick Youngberg was back for that too.
Rick Youngberg was there. In fact,
Bob and Mike both on drums.
I don't recall.
You were on some of this stuff.
Okay.
Yeah,
because I know I went in the studio again.
Yeah,
and
that's when a lot of things were going on behind the scenes that we really weren't privy to until finally Chris Moon said, oh, well, we've been closed down here. And of course, all those masters, now all I have from those sessions are the mix masters. I have some mix masters. And I have a bunch of cassettes and things like that.
Were they demo songs or were they completed songs?
Well, they were completed songs. They may just not have been totally done to my satisfaction. Because at that time, I was kind of the prime focalizer for what was happening. I was paying for everything at that point. I paid for those sessions at Moonsound. Nobody else in the band at that point had been contributing to the finances of it. And so we went, and also we were there when John Lennon was shot. That night that John Lennon was shot, Rick Youngberg went home and he wrote this song called Dear John. And we went into the studio the next day and we recorded a version. We recorded two versions of Dear John, and it was all about John Lennon being shot. And one version came out with Rick playing electric lead to it, and the other one was more of an acoustic, softer version of it. We ended up sending a copy of that tape to Yoko. So I don't know if she ever did get a copy of it. I would imagine she did. And I think we did get some fresh press releases. Oh, local group does this, blah, blah. So, yeah, that was kind of a milestone in that period. And then later to find out that this young rock star Prince had been recording in there, and Chris Moon gave him full carte blanche to his studio. That was another thing that came later. It was kind of a nice memory.
Okay, then we can jump forward to April 11, 1980, and this is the band reuniting for their 10th anniversary of the album release, and this is at the Great Hall at Kauffman Union at the University of Minnesota.
Yes.
Yep. Yeah, that was a fun time.
It was a fun time. Now, in order to play at the University Great Hall, you had to have either been a student, or you would have to be sponsored into that. So we were sponsored by a student group called the L5 Society. L5 refers to the Lagrange point 5, which is the gravitational midpoint between the Earth and the Moon, where gravity cancels out. That's the L5 point. And the L5 Society were comprised of students who were interested in space colonization and space migration. And so they were designing space habitats and what are we going to do when we get out to L5? And all these satellites now are being put up at the L5 point. And so they were forward-thinking group of young students. They sponsored us for that gig. And we went in, and Clancy Cullen said he could record it. So in the back, Clancy's got a four-track recorder, and he and his friend are going to record the show, which they did.
Bob, what do you recall from that night?
Well, I remember before the job, before the gig, we were at the hall. We had a room where we were kind of psyching ourselves up, not drug-wise, but just psyching ourselves up to do this job. And we got message that there was KSTP was out front wanting to interview us. So we went out, and I believe the interviewer's name at that time was Kathy Dalglish, but she nicknamed the band in her piece, her news piece, the Princes of Darkness or the Princes of Night, or I can't remember. It was kind of when I heard it, I was a little annoyed because it made it sound like we were dark people, dark as in our thinking, and we were not. Obviously, we were still about peace and love. The job was hard to pull together because we had all gone our own ways, and we rehearsed as many times as we possibly could. It was a good gig. I know that I had a lot of personal friends there. I asked them afterwards how the sound was, and they said it was fine. So we really had high hopes for the recording that Clancy did.
I still have that, man.
Now, who was in the band that night for the reunion concert?
That would have been Rick Youngberg, would have been Bob, and myself, and Bill.
And Bill, yep.
Yeah. And Clancy, of course, was out there recording us. Now, at that time, 80, 81, I'd been going through a whole series of health issues. Little did I know I inherited this rare birth defect called porphyria. And I had an uncle who died from it. I had a mother who suffered from it. It's a genetic thing. So I came down with a problem with that in 1972. It was right after we kind of stopped playing professionally, semi-professionally. And at that time, I took a big dive because I developed this condition. And it was a terrible thing. Anyways, my doctor had been working on a possible cure for this condition. And so I'm the first person on the planet to get the only known treatment for this rare birth defect series. It's a metabolism disorder, and it's called porphyria. And there's different types of porphyria. I have the acute intermittent, so it's very, very painful for, maybe a week or two. And so through the 70s up until the reunion gig, that was my last one problem I had with that condition was in 1981. So, but it was still real rocky for me, even trying to do all the music things. And like Bob said, we had all kind of gone separate ways at that point, and then came back for, you know, just to do this reunion.
And you had the same two light guys from Dania Hall, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah, Gary was there, Gary Dale.
Yeah, Gary was there. Dick Tatsky was there.
Yeah.
Years later, I ran into Gary Dale at the Calhoun Beach Club, where I was a member for a while. And Gary was a member there, so I reconnected with him for a bit. Also, Marsh Edelstein was a member there, and I would run into Marsh every now and then. And let's see, there was some other rockers there. Down in the locker room was it Poison Bird Pie, or his name was Mark? You guys probably would know him, but
not Mick.
No, it was Mark.
Mark, if I remember. Don't know who that would be.
Anyway, so yeah, there were some other people I met through the Calhoun Beach Club, and that was the last time I've seen Gary Dale. Now, I have not seen or talked with Dick Tatsky. I don't know if he's around, moved, or I know the last number I called him. At that time, he was doing a light show called the Magic Lantern Light Show and lived over south, but I don't know where they are now.
So all the years go by, then all of a sudden 2015, and you get contacted by Sundazed, right?
Yeah, was it 2015?
Yeah, that's the date on the album.
Oh, is that?
Oh, that could be the date on the album, but they were.
The CD came out first.
Oh, the CD was before the vinyl.
Yeah, the CD would have been reissued 33 years later. So that was what? Let's see, 1970. So that would have been 30. That would have been about 2003.
Yeah, because I was still coming up to Rogers every day, working at the time, stopping at Dick's that night, and we would negotiate or we would discuss what Sundays wanted to do.
Correct. The CD came out in 2003, and it had a variety of bonus tracks on there.
Yeah.
Something's Missing, a medley, Coming On, City of Light, Home Again, The Fool with the Jewel, Step Quietly and Quickly, Elf in a Magic Bottle, In Dreams.
Yes.
Now let's do an update on the band members. What has happened to the members of the Paisleys over the years?
Well, Greg Payton has moved on to the other side. Clancy Cullen has moved on to the other side. Bill Smith has moved on. Rick Youngberg just passed on a few years ago. Brad Stodden passed on a few years ago.
And then the other two from various other eras of the band are Mike and Bob on drums.
Yes, and Mike Cornelius eventually went on to go to India and to become a Tibetan Buddhist Lama. He is now an official Buddhist Lama. And he's now residing in Asheville, North Carolina.
And where are you and what are you doing these days, Richard?
I live in Harris, Minnesota. I moved out there in 1995.
And Bob, what are you up to these days?
I've been retired now for about 9 years.
And where do you live?
I live in River Falls now, River Falls, Wisconsin.
What did you do after the music business?
Was working at a different plastics factory in River Falls, working for the quality organization, quality control. Basically, my job was quality analyst, which I was the complaint department. People called me for issues with their parts if there was an issue.
Okay.
So I stayed with that for a while. I was also playing with Clancy quite a bit. Clancy took me out of drumming retirement. I worked with Clancy, Abbott Lair. I don't know if you know any of those guys or Jim Brewer. But at any rate, it was fun working with those guys. I worked with them for a few years.
And when you look back on your time in the Paisleys, what kind of thoughts, reflections do you have sitting here today in 2019?
Well, I think at the time I was I was young. When I first met them, I was only 17. I really loved the determination that the band had. They were looking at this as a serious job. And a lot of musicians I had been playing with up to that point never did. And so I appreciated their attitude towards it. I really enjoyed working with Bill. I lived at Bill's house. So Bill and I would get up in the morning and have breakfast. And off we would go to Ralph's or to promoters or whoever and just, you know, try to do some promoting. It was a learning experience for me on how to take music very seriously. I loved it. I really enjoyed it. There was I had to stop taking LSD for a while because it was getting a little too hard on me. Basically, while I was in Canada, I stopped using it. When I came back down, well, I've never had it since. So I went through some very big changes in my life with those guys. And I would say most of them were all positive to see the serious side of it, you know. So,
do we know what happened to Paul George?
Yes, I contacted Paul about 2 years ago. He's in Victoria, British Columbia, which is the capital of the province, and on Vancouver Island. And his wife is a politician up there. Paul went on to create what's now the Green Party in Canada. He started that. He was always working as a conservationist, wanting to protect trees. British Columbia is a big lumbering province. And Paul was against cutting down all the trees, ruining the ecosystem and the natural rainforest. So as far as I know, a couple years ago when I talked to him, he was still living in Victoria.
Okay. And Richard, 2019, looking back all the way to the time of the Paisleys, what are your thoughts and reflections?
It's been a marvelous life. You know, I have had such a wide spectrum of experiences. Everything from the worst pain and suffering you can imagine to being able to work through it all, to know that what I've learned has made me a better human being. Not only that, coming to grips with my humanness has now excelled me to pursue the eternal adventure. I can't wait to check out of this life. I'm not in a hurry, mind you. And I have no reason or desire to end it abruptly, but I can see the future. I've had a peak. The veil has lifted. I know there's so much more. It just makes my life. I can get so excited even talking about it. But I've learned to rein it in, you know. Learning to speak to understanding is probably one of the biggest lessons I've still yet to learn. How much to say to people based on their ability to understand. We're all so different because we all have individual experiences, but I've now come to have great trust in this process called life, that life does not just end when the material level ceases. And it's a wonderful adventure. And I know all of our brothers and sisters that have passed on before me, we're going to have a reunion again for all those that survived this life. I have no doubt about that. Or let's say my doubt has been maybe 1%, you know. And I do enjoy my life. I have a wonderful family. I have wonderful kids. I have grandchildren. I have a great granddaughter. I'm so blessed. All the people in my life who have ever helped to contribute to my being, I'm so appreciative of them. And this movement that started back there in the 60s, this peace, love, and you know, all that stuff, I still believe in it today. I'm really blessed.
One thing that I know I've been leaving out is the fact that impressed me the most when I started having children, how everybody wanted to know more about the Paisleys. Now, Dick's kids, his grandkids, my kids, and my grandkids, they all know, and they know of the Paisleys. But that the reason for that was when we were younger, we communed together with our children and our wives and girlfriends and whatnot as a group. You know, back in the 60s, we embraced each other and our families. It wasn't just the band members. The Paisleys encompassed the families of the band members as well.
The Minnesota family band. That's that was about.
That's where that came from. Yeah. And by the way, while we're talking earlier about Marsh, Michael was in town this past spring.
Michael
Cornelius. When he comes to town, he stays at my house for a couple nights. And while we were sitting there one night, Michael said, I'm going to look up Marsh and see if he's still in business. He looked up, he got a phone number, he gave Marsh a call. And Marsh immediately said, I love the Paisleys. I mean, I think Michael almost dropped the phone when he said that. But Marsh is still out there. And yes, he still, according to him, he still has, you know, he still likes the Paisleys. So that's cool. That's really cool.
Well, I think a footnote to this conversation is that today is the 50th anniversary of day three of the Woodstock Music and Art Fair held in Bethel, in New York. Exactly 50 years ago today was day three. So we'll wind up there. And gentlemen, Bob and Richard, thank you for taking the time to talk with us today about the Paisleys.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's great what you guys are doing. I noticed your wall here with all these bands up here, and I'm going, my gosh, I haven't heard hardly any of these groups. And, you know, I'm familiar with the names of a lot of them, and I even see you got Mojo Buford up here. When I got out of the Navy and started my first band here playing professionally, it was with Jerry Deotis. And we call him Jerry Deotis and the D-Times at the Skyway 12 Club out on Old Highway 12. And Mojo Buford was the first band to play during a Sunday afternoon. Then later that night it would be Jerry Deotis and the D-Times, of which then I started playing lead guitar for that group. But all these bands, gosh, you guys got the whole...
Yeah, you're doing a good job. Holy
man.
You really are.
And all the litter, my goodness, and the Jokers, wild. Just flooding in, all these groups.
You know, and if
guys.
I could just interject too, over the years, going on the internet and looking at web pages, there's been a lot of misconceptions. When I see a biography of the band and dates are all confused, names were all confused, to have this opportunity to actually go on record and saying, here's what happened, has been very appreciative. I'm very appreciative of that.
Minipaw Music has been going on for at least 10 years now. Danny Johnson and I have one goal for this website, and it is to document and preserve the story of Minnesota rock bands from 1955 to 1975, which is, of course, the first 20 years of rock and roll. And in that in that 20-year time frame, there were hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of bands from Minnesota alone.
Right.
So it's the more you dig into musical history and you find out what a tremendous history we have right here in
That's
Minnesota,
right. Yep.
it's almost unbelievable. There were so many bands, thousands of 45s, dozens of albums, and bands playing every night of the week.
It's a renaissance, wasn't it? It's a real renaissance.
It was a renaissance.
Absolutely.
It was a renaissance. So our job here is to document and preserve that time period. Once again, Bob and Richard, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.